Okay, I guess this show has started. Hi, and welcome to the third installment of the rejuvenated, back resurrected triple feature. I'm Gordon McAlpin, and with me today are Joe Dunn of Joe Loves Crappy
Hello.
Movies,
Hi.
and Tom Brazelton of Theater Hopper, and a web comic to be named and launched.
Yeah, you know what? My life, boy. I've been getting emails about it because I did the Theater Hopper Kickstarter for the ebooks, and they're all supposed to be done by now. Like I said, by February of 2014. No, it didn't happen that way. So I got to write everybody and let them know what's going on. Won't be the first guy to kind of flake on a Kickstarter, but I will finish it. So don't
Well,
worry.
you know, you're not, you're, okay. Mind you, I'm biased here, but I will say that you're not flaking unless you're not updating and you haven't, put out anything. For instance, my book two Kickstarter, it is printed and I am just now mailing some out, but I'm in the very long, like it's going to
You mean
be like a
this
2 month
one?
long. Yeah, it's going to be a 2 month long process of fulfilling all the rewards. And so some of them don't even have the book yet, but it is almost a year late
Yeah.
now.
No,
No.
I'm straight up flaking. I haven't posted updates and I've made very little progress, mostly due to hardware issues. I need to get because my PC is just it when I started up InDesign to put together the books, it said that's cute. And just drags. So I don't know. I need to upgrade my business. But I don't like the Creative Cloud, and Adobe's kind of putting the screws to me there. So we'll figure
Yeah,
it out.
I like it. I also have the education discount because I'm a grad student.
Yeah.
So its biggest flaw, the cost, is doesn't really bother me. Even if I was paying $50 a month, $300 a year, that works out too, right? No, $600 a year.
Yeah.
I'm bad. $600 a year, that's roughly, if you update it every 2 years, it's
Well,
a little bit worse than
at some point I'm probably going to have to cave in on the cloud, but I have a potential resource that could help me. I know I have a friend who's working at Adobe, so he said that he might be able to get me CS6. For cheap, and I'm like, I can make, and I'm paying for it. I'm not like pirating or anything. I want to make that clear. But I'm just getting previous software, at, a good discount, and I can stretch out CX6 for a while. That's fine. But yeah, anyway, once I get that nailed down, then hopefully putting the books together in the next few months or summer will go a lot faster.
Well, good luck.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, so the topics tonight, the triple threat of triple feature topics, we've been kind of keeping up this pattern of doing a movie, a TV show, and a comic book for the last couple of weeks, and we seem to enjoy that. So this week, we're going to be talking about a trio of topics as well. Almost Human, the J.J. Abrams science fiction TV series featuring an artificially intelligent cop and his human partner, played by Judge Dredd.
I like how Judge Dredd gets second billing on that one.
I flipped that. And Avengers AI, Human After All, Volume 1 of Avengers AI, the ongoing Marvel series featuring Hank Pym and a bunch of robots. And then lastly, we'll be talking about Robot and Frank, an indie comedy drama starring Frank Langella and a robot.
Snuck that one in there.
Yeah.
Spoiler
Fun.
alert, robot in it.
So yeah, let's start things off with Almost Human. I don't know about you guys, but I started watching several weeks into the series. I'm not big on watching. I don't watch TV because all I've got is Hulu and Netflix and stuff. So I don't pay attention at all to like what's new out on broadcast television. If I hear about something being good, I'll check it out. I think Joe recommended that we include Almost Human for one of our weeks. Or no, was it Tom? I forget. Anyways,
I think I put together this list. Well, we talked about Almost Human a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, it was the first or the second show, and then we said, well, we should probably just address it proper.
Right.
So we just, and I think we then picked the other two properties based off of Almost Human. So as we'll find out how well that worked a little later.
Right, right. So once again, the premise is Detective John Kennex, played by Carl Urban, a.k.a. Judge Dredd, wakes up from a coma after a while, has an artificial leg, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so robot cop partner. That's the gist of it. It's, you know, sci-fi cop procedural, and there are some vague elements of mythology, but at this point in the series, they haven't quite taken over. What have you guys thought about the series so far?
Well, I came to it a lot differently than you. I watch a lot of TV, so I was attacked with the viral campaign and the, you know, the commercials and everything. And the thing about Almost Human is it's a great idea, so there's no reason to not to really be into it. I think everyone that's heard the idea is like, yeah, that's fun. That sounds great. And these actors are great. Everyone loves Carl Urban. He's great. So I was ready for it. I was like, yes, let's do this. Almost Human. Great. And they did a two-night premiere. They did like a Sunday-Monday pilot, yeah. Like two episodes back-to-back. And those two episodes are great. I think they lay out the word you'll hear is mythology, but they set up this great mythology for the characters and the world and all these great things. And then after that, it sort of slips into a procedural. It's very much like high-tech Law and Order. Like, here's a crime, here's how it was committed in a tech-savvy way, and here's the two characters that are solving the crime. And I think this is where the show's failing, is that it's not living up to the promise of the great pilot, where there's this secret story going on where he was bombed, and it might have been his missing girlfriend that bombed him. It might have definitely been her, and she's not mentioned for another 8 episodes. Like, not seen, not mentioned, gone. And so the big thing for me is that the show is fine. It's interesting, it's fine, but it's not really building. It's not living up to the promise of the really terrific pilot.
We were talking about this a little bit, and something that I figured out after that great episode with there's an episode with I can't say her name, Gina Carano, who plays another kind of deadly android assassin thing. John Larroquette shows up as her creator and the creator of Dorian, played by Michael Ealy, who is the one half of the crime-fighting duo. But that was such a great episode where they set up, again, that larger mythology. There's apparently this huge wall that surrounds their city. John Larroquette goes over the other side and the episode ends. Spoilers. But mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I can't wait to see where this goes. And then they immediately go back to procedural crap. Like, the episode that followed was about genetically modified, like, students creating drugs with a 3D printer to, like, enhance their consciousness. And you're like, and then somebody ODs or something. Interesting, but what happened to John Larroquette? Not told. So, but what's happening is that Fox is jumping around the order of these episodes. So what's really interesting, well, not interesting, frustrating, is that one of the key components of the show, I think, is the banter between Michael Ealy and Carl Urban. They have a really good rapport. They are kind of playfully antagonistic. At the beginning, they don't like each other at all, and then, you know, it warms up as it goes. But there are flashes in these episodes where they're like, they're getting along, they hate each other. They're getting along, they hate each other. What the hell is going on? Like, it's not consistent. So, and that's why Fox is messing it around too much. So it's frustrating when you get the sense that this show has an idea in its head, is trying to do a little bit of world building, and they're just playing pickup sticks with it, basically.
See, yeah, you're right that the shuffling of the episodes kind of gets in the way a little bit, but for the most part, I hadn't really noticed. It did seem a little inconsistent in the characterization a couple of times. I guess I did notice, but it wasn't any huge thing for me. And both of you guys have brought up how they have this kind of mythology and then they set it aside for a few episodes. That interestingly doesn't bother me at all because I don't see this as a mythology show. And it's even X-Files had the Monster of the Week episodes every now and then. And that's kind of what they're doing, and they're sort of easing themselves into this mythology. You're right. There are times where these standalone episodes kind of fall flat. There was one with a psychic that I thought was kind of groan-worthy. Yeah. And I call it Sci-Fi Hard, the Die Hard ripoff. I think we mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Blatant Die Hard ripoff. It was a fun episode because of the chemistry between the two leads, but it was like really stupid in terms of like an actual story. So because we've all seen that. We don't need to watch Die Hard Redux. We've already seen Die Hard 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
Nobody saw 5. Don't feel bad.
Nobody saw 5. So okay. But yeah, so it doesn't bother me too much that they're kind of stepping aside and focusing on, just the day-to-day job. Because, when you think about it, like, there are going to be other things going on in between,
bigger cases.
Him waking up. Yeah, other cases. And arguably, maybe those don't need to be told if the larger story, the mythology, is the more interesting one of the two.
But that's the problem. The larger story is not interesting. Like they haven't put anything into it to make it truly, truly interesting. I don't think.
They've teased some things. You're right. I don't think we have much to go on yet. John Larroquette. I think there's some ideas in there about where the synthetic souls that give the robots like Dorian, consciousness. Where that comes from, there's some ideas in there about that, and so I feel like they've had little moments in just about every episode that are going to feed into this larger mythology, but they haven't been like entire episodes around the larger mythology.
Well, I mean, the show isn't like Lost or True Detective, where they're giving a piece and piece and piece and piece, and it comes together. I did feel that the John Larroquette episode was more of the turning point, though, where, like, a lot of these procedural episodes gets you to know the main cast and characters. You get about 6 episodes in, you get a feel for it. Now tell me a little bit more about the larger world. There's so much potential in the show, and that's what makes it frustrating to me. The best description I've read of it is that it has a retro-future vibe. So I feel like it's a show very much designed for someone of my age, where it basically presents the future as we envisioned it in the 1980s. It's got a Blade Runner motif running through it. It's got a little bit of RoboCop happening. You know what I mean? So there's all these kind of retro future pieces in it that I'm like, oh, that's exactly what I want the future to be like, you know?
It has pieces of that, but it's not telling a story. And I think it really comes down to me for that. Like, I'm really having a hard time with it. This is turning into a show a lot more like The Mentalist or Castle, where they have big stories that they give little pieces of, but it's very much a procedural. And if you compare those shows, which I enjoy, I love Castle, never miss it, but like if you compare it to something like Breaking Bad or Lost or Mad Men, it's not even come close to priority TV. And
yeah.
This is a show that could so easily be priority TV if every week, just for a minute, he was like, where is that bitch? once per episode. That's all I'm asking.
They've had a couple where, I don't remember which episode it was, but it was recent, where they found out that there was a listening device in Kennex's home.
Yeah.
He was about to give it up, and then he found out, oh, wait, they've been listening to me the whole time, so that's how they've been staying a step ahead. But yeah, I agree. What the promise that was set up in the pilot hasn't been resolved, and I don't know how it will be resolved. I'm willing to see it through. We talked about Helix a couple weeks ago. And Helix was a show where it's like, that's a show that's very much about the mythology and moving it forward one piece at a time, and what does this person know, and what were their relationships? You're supposed to be asking those questions. Although, we didn't, it didn't grab us, maybe. I don't know, are either of you guys still watching Helix?
No, I haven't caught up.
Okay, so it's crap. But anyway, Almost Human doesn't have that you know, what's going to happen next vibe to it, but I do want to see where it goes next, because I like the idea. They established the premise right at the beginning in the opening credits. It's like Quantum Leap, you know, where it's like every life he fixes and the next leap will be the next leap home. Well, in Almost Human, they set it up where, like, technology has advanced to the point where it can barely be regulated, so cops are playing catch-up. So I like this idea of, like, criminals are so far technologically advanced that everyone else is just doing the best that they can. I want to see how I do feel like they are utilizing technology in a way that's both practical and interesting and kind of an outcropping of what we're currently seeing. There was an episode last week about smart homes. Like, a kid jumps the wall of a house that has a smart home security system, and he's shot and killed on the property by the system. They're like, he's an intruder, boom, and they shoot him. And it was kind of a clumsy political statement, I think, in terms of, like, people defending their homes with, you know, their own guns, not having robots firing them for them. But it seemed plausible in terms of, like, well, you know, either I can shoot the gun or the robot targeting system can do it.
See, I didn't see it as a political statement about people, you know, whatever, standing their ground in their own home. I saw it as more like the futuristic alarmist extrapolation of the wired home, like, you know, stemming from Nest. So, right. I don't know, I saw it from the technology out rather than kind of this futuristic metaphor for current day political issues. I kind of see your point. But, you know, the thing is, we've only got two episodes left this season. Odds of getting a good resolution on the stuff teased in the pilot, slim to none. Yeah. And the ratings actually have it kind of in doubt whether or not it's going to get renewed. It's been hanging on to about 9 million, roughly, viewers per week when everything's said and done, DVR, Hulu, and all of that. But like, the actual network prime, or, you know, the actual network ratings have been dropping every time. So so it's interesting what they're going to put, you know, where the priority is going to fall for Fox, right?
It's on. Do you think that it's an expensive show? Like,
yeah.
I really think it is. I mean, you know, aside from the fact that it's 13 episodes per hour, it's got to cost a fair amount. It's got a really good cast. It's got a fair chunk of special effects. You know, a lot of the establishing shots are almost entirely computer generated.
Yeah.
Some of the special effects are pretty simple, like, you know, a little robot thing gliding over.
A drone kind of flying around.
The drone thing, which is their idea of, hey, it's in the future.
Yeah.
Like a drone flying over a forest. It's like, okay, just the drone is the only thing that's in there. But it's got a pretty good budget. Crystal Method can't come cheap, you know, and I really think that their music adds so much to the series, particularly the action scenes, which when they do have them are usually really good. You know, they couldn't take full advantage of Gina Carano being in the episode that she was.
Let alone Minka Kelly every week. Nothing. They can't. Why aren't they using her?
Yeah.
Almost Minka.
That is a shame. There really should be more Minka Kelly in it. I love her. I know both of you guys love her, but they, aside from the occasional tease of Kinex and her hooking it up, she doesn't have a lot to do.
Yeah, I would say the breakout star of the show really for me is Michael Ealy. He is so good as Dorian, so natural. And he's supposed to be, you know, he's an android, but it's not the beep, bop, boop thing. The performance feels so like, natural to me that it made me want to go back and watch other things that he's done. Because I was like, why is he not on my radar? And also, why is he not in more things? He's good. He's really good. So
what else has he been in?
I don't know. I feel like there's a Tyler Perry movie in there somewhere that he's been in.
It made you want to seek it out, but not actually seek it out.
Well, the stuff that wasn't on Netflix, that's as close
Cell?
As I can get.
He was in Sleeper Cell. He was in Flash Forward. He had a couple of appearances in, like, an episode here, an episode there.
Yeah. None of this is he's not the lead on any of this, though. That's the thing.
No.
So, I mean, I'm not going to watch a shitty movie that he's in for 5 minutes.
He's been in a few other movies, like Miracle in Santa Ana, and For Colored Girls, Think Like a Man, and Think Like a Man 2.
Barbershop 2, Back in Business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but I'm just saying I like him a lot.
Miracle in Santa Ana was a Spike Lee movie, and I believe... Oh, and yeah. So Spike Lee, Tyler Perry... Barbershop.
He had a Battle Last Night, which is the number one movie in America right now that doesn't have Legos in it.
That should be the advertising campaign.
Yeah, but he has this giant Lionel Richie mustache on it, so you won't even recognize him. So.
Yikes. Hello.
Oh, no, wait, that's somebody else. Who is that? That's another actor, I think. Or maybe it's him also. I can't tell. It's a tiny poster. Anyway,
I agree. He's great on the show. And Carl Urban is playing Carl Urban like he's played Carl Urban every time he's played Carl Urban. But that's great. That's what you want from Carl Urban. Mm-hmm.
Did he really play himself, though, in which Lord of the Rings movie was he in? The second one or the third one?
Yeah, he was going through a weird phase that year.
He grew out his hair. He dyed it blonde. It was really unusual. He became a horse master. No, he actually used his real accent, I guess, in the last episode where they're like trying to traverse the hacker underground or something like that.
Hmm. I didn't know he was. I didn't know that.
I think he's British, isn't he? Or Zealand? Sorry, New Zealand. I'm gonna get in trouble for that. From New Zealand.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This is completely news to me. He is New Zealand.
Thought he was American?
Huh. Yeah, he's from New Zealand. Amazing.
There you go. Carl Heinz Urban.
I heard he named one of his kids Indy after Indiana Jones.
Whoa.
It's hardcore.
Indiana.
Yeah.
Indiana and Hunter.
Well, I've said it. I mentioned it on Google once. Every time I watch Almost Human, it makes me want to go back and watch Dread. I don't know why.
It was a really good movie.
He's great in that movie. He's great in
Scouts.
People forget it because it was before he was huge, but he's great in The Bourne Supremacy. He's the guy that, beginning in that the island chase scene. He's great. He's great in that movie.
Well, I didn't remember him from that. Huh. So I think the consensus is that Almost Human's a good show, but you two are frustrated with it taking its time with the mythology.
I'm just ready for it to be something. Be anything. Yeah.
I'm actually pretty patient with it. Although now that I realize that it's only 13 episodes, I can see why you might want a little more to have happened by now. And of course, with the threat of possible cancellation looming, you would like to see some kind of conclusion.
But I feel like it's got to pull some major hat trick, a rabbit out of its hat for that last episode. There's got to be some crazy cliffhanger. Or else we're in trouble. I would hate to see it tank. I don't know. The thing I was thinking about is that like between this show and New Girl and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, this is the most I've watched Fox in years. So they got a good thing going. Don't mess it up. Just let the show breathe a little bit. Throw a little extra money at it if you can, and they can beef up some of their sequences. But for the most part, I think it gets by very well. It doesn't have to be as sci-fi heavy as I think it wants to be. If it can beef up the storytelling elements.
Last words from you, Joe?
I mean, if you're, if this is the kind of show you like, then by all means, please.
If this is the kind of show you like, you will like this show. Yeah,
you'll like it. I wish it was better, that's all. But I'll keep watching it, because whatever.
I thought you guys were both way more enthusiastic about this show.
I'm very enthusiastic about it. I'm personally very enthusiastic about it. I want it to be more. That's how much I like it. I'm not going to say that it's perfect. It's not. But I like the premise. I like generally how it's being executed. Some shows are better than... I mean, some of the episodes are better than others. But overall, I really want to see Kennex and Dorian on screen together. I like that partnership. I think the actors play well off each other. That's what keeps me coming back to the show, not the tech crime of the week, or even the larger conspiracy of it. I really like those two actors, and I think they need to just keep pushing it forward.
That whole will they or won't they thing is really cool.
Okay. So let's move on. The second subject of the week is Avengers AI.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's all right. It's written by Sam Humphries and drawn, at least in the first four issues, by Andre Araujo, and then picked up in issues 5 and 6 by Valerio Chitty. Chitty?
Oh, geez.
Sorry.
Dude, I hope his name can't be Chitty.
No, actually, I have to say, I liked Valerio's art, Valerio Chitty's whatever art, significantly more than Andre Araujo's art. That was the saving grace for the volume is that Sheedy's art was actually pretty good. The rest of it was a bit of a slog. I think we're all on the same page with that.
Yeah.
But let's let Tom talk about his great shame with suggesting this to us.
I've got a lot of great shames. This is the greatest. This is a case of kind of trying to cram a square peg into a round hole. We had Almost Human, we had Robot and Frank, and it's like, what's a good robot story that we could all read? Avengers AI was launched, probably 7 or 8 months ago in the wake of Marvel's last big event, which was Age of Ultron. So I thought, like, oh, well, this is kind of an extension of that. Then maybe it could also be a bridge to the Age of Ultron movie that we're getting next year, although entirely probably not. But I just thought, well, okay, it's current, worth a look. I don't know. The thing of it is that it's centered around Hank Pym, a character that I don't particularly like, that I think has been so mismanaged over the years that he's almost irredeemable. But who's just kind of kept on because he was a founding Avenger. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, well, he's a really good guy, and you just got to give him a chance to get to know him. He didn't mean all that stuff. Like, they've retconned him so much, I don't know what's true about him and what's not anymore. And something that AI introduces is that, oh, he's bipolar. On top of it all, he's bipolar. Okay, I don't know if that was a previously established character factoid about him, but that it was thrown in there kind of haphazardly, I was like, that's kind of a drag.
My understanding is that was actually kind of explaining, without retconning, some of his bad behavior in the past.
Right.
They couldn't just make him an alcoholic like Tony Stark was. But, you know, you had to kind of explain why he did beat his wife, right? Yeah.
Well, see, but that was the other thing. I'm a Marvel guy. Not everybody's a Marvel, you know, or whatever. I'm a Marvel guy. I like the events, better or worse. They already explained away the whole wife-beating stuff with Hank Pym in Secret Invasion because he had been replaced by a Skrull. For, like, the last 30 years, he was a Skrull. You know what I mean? So, like, that Skrull, now he was the one that was beating his wife, and now the regular Hank Pym is back. Oh, but by the way, he's bipolar. But I don't know. That's just one of the smallest things that's kind of wrong with this. It's they bring together characters who have kind of either they're androids or they're robots, and they're all about. This is another series that's trying to be tech forward and kind of falls on its face. I didn't care about any of the characters. The art was the only thing that got better by the end of it. The cartoony style that Araujo puts together, I'm not a fan of. So, I don't know. It was a dud for me. I wouldn't recommend it.
Just real quick on the art. I think the art is the thing that kept me going throughout. Even as the story would get boring, there would be an exciting moment where there'd be a moment where the artist would be allowed to do like a splash page or a half page illustration. And I think the first big one is Hank Pym erupting from the shackles of his chairs. And there's one later on where there's a sentinel holding up the Washington Monument. And those are really beautiful pieces. I mean, early on in the series. And those are the ones where I would rest, and I would look, and I would take it all in and everything. And that's fun, that's nice. So artistically, this was a good experience for me.
Yeah, Araujo did actually have some good bits. I'm flipping through it again and reminding myself. I think he is a little inconsistent, particularly when it comes to the quieter moments.
He has issues with body length for sure. Like,
yeah,
like, it'll hit the belt and then the legs will shoot. It's like these people don't have genitals at all, which they're
rocks,
but they don't
need them. Like rocks.
There's a proportion problem there.
Right. It's yeah. Like, I mean, he's got potential, and I'm certainly not saying that I could draw superhero comics better. But the real issue really is the script. The stories are I don't really get any sense of why anything is happening. I don't care about any of the characters, which is interesting because I already cared about some of the characters. Victor from Runaways. I liked him in Runaways, and here I'm just like,
he's milquetoast.
Yeah.
He's given a little story, but it's so nothing that it doesn't even matter. Like he's the one character that's like given doubt or or something to think about, and he's not even really given a chance to think about it, and it's not interesting enough. For me, the only character worth a damn is Doombot, because he's the only character that comes in and says anything that's interesting, anything that's funny. The fact that he's there is a joke, and I love it. But
yeah,
agreed.
Doom and by extension the Doombots are probably one of the greatest gifts in comics because it's pure ego and just becomes innately funny whatever situation you plug him into. Because I'm Doom, I'm master of all. Like, well, you're just a robot.
Yeah.
I would like to kind of talk about the new status quo for Vision, though, because I do feel that Humphrey's introduced some good ideas regarding him. Where before he was just the android that could change his density. Now he's apparently made up of some sort of nanobot situation where he can, like, he's kind of like Carnage or one of the symbiotes or something, where he can send out these robotic, not tendrils, but, you know, pieces of himself. That's interesting. Like, when we're introduced to him, he's orbiting the sun, just storing up energy for the next time Ultron comes back. Well, then they call him back, and he absorbs a meteorite to, like... to integrate into a system. Like, there's stuff like that that's kind of really interesting. And I think the book would be better served if he was the focus and not Pym. Pym doesn't need to be there, I really don't think. I think if it was about Vision and, getting away from the whole cold, emotionless, logical android thing, make the machine the soul of the book, and it would be more entertaining.
But Tom, if Pym wasn't there, then who would screw everything up?
Who would get drunk and blow up the world? Him?
I agree, to an extent, for sure. The Vision is great, and I think their new approach to it is a lot of fun. And if he were the focus, it'd be great, because you could definitely do this whole half-humanity, half-robotics sort of split. Like, whose side is he really on? That whole thing. You could really explore that and really make it interesting.
I've got another suggestion that'll tweak Gordon. Matt Fraction, I think, would be really good with this concept. Gordon was talking about Fraction like a week or so ago and wasn't on board with maybe him as a writer on some of the stuff. What were you talking about, Uncanny Avengers?
Or, no, Rick Remender.
Remender. I love Matt. I'm sorry.
I'm like, what are you talking about? Rick
Remender.
Wrong guy. Yeah.
Well, because you felt that like Avengers, Uncanny Avengers was really like ham-handed, and it can be. But you could the whole concept of that book was mutants and humans working together. You could apply that to Avengers AI and do humans and androids working together. But Remender did a really good job on his X-Force run with kind of dystopian future and tech gone wrong, those kind of ideas. And stuff that was also layered over into his run on Secret Avengers. That kind of like larger conspiracy would have fit in perfectly with Avengers AI. But instead, it's about Hank Pym and his fucking problems. I don't care. You know,
the other thing that really drives me nuts is this whole everybody hates robots thing now. It's so exactly the same as everybody hates mutants. And it just...
They're robophobic, you mean?
It's just like, why? Why did this...
Well, it's Marvel, so the heroes have to be hated. It's not DC where they're all treated like golden gods.
Well, I'm not saying they need to be loved, but this whole, robots.
I take it to mean that the denizens of the Marvel Universe are extremely fickle. There's... You know, where, like, if J. Jonah Jameson says Spider-Man is bad, everybody goes, fuck Spider-Man, he's right. And then they're like, oh, wait, he saved the city, we love you against Spider-Man, but then next week, well, we hate Spider-Man. It's like that kind of thing. The people in the Marvel Universe just, they don't have a thought in their heads.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I don't have any other thoughts on AI. I don't know. It was a failed experiment.
Joe.
I think the problem is we're seeing the first part of something that is obviously larger. We're reading the first six issues of probably what they have planned out to be 24 of, like, a robot uprising, a robot versus human war, that sort of thing. And that's fine. We're just seeing the beginning of it, and the beginning's just not that interesting. I mean, there are nice ideas, but it's just not it's not juicy enough to make me want to continue.
It's not well done either, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the ideas were better, I could probably hang in just for them, but, like, this to me reminds me of all the reasons I got bored reading superhero comics, mainstream superhero comics, in the first place. Nothing important is happening. It's status quo shifting and fights, some often for no reason, and everything being played as dramatically as possible, mostly because the artists don't know what the words are going to be when they're drawing the panels.
I want to explore that idea for a minute, because you said there was, like, nothing important going on, and there's this dichotomy in mainstream comics where people are having event burnout, where that's where the status changes happen, the big events happen, and then books like Avengers AI they're the aftermath of those big events. So they're kind of caught between two worlds, I guess. They can't tell an ongoing story like Spider-Man can, where it's like a little pocket that's unaffected by anything else that's going on in the larger Marvel universe. They're very much tied to these events.
I don't mean, like, those are just big status quo shifts. I don't mean status quo shifts at all in terms of, like, the importance of a story. I mean, like, changing the fucking world. They're superheroes, you know? Squadron Supreme could do it, but then it gets undone, or it's non-continuity or whatever, because you can't make the world any different than it is in real life, never mind that you've got, like, Mr. Fantastic and Tony Stark living in the fucking Earth, you know? Like, they should be able to solve the world's problems.
Mr. Fantastic is traveling with the Fantastic Four on a space voyage, and Tony Stark is clearly with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
But they've been around since the 60s.
I don't know if any of that's true, I'm just joking.
You know, there was another Avengers book, Avengers Academy, before the whole arcade murder world story plot that they had, but that they had one of the characters in that book, the villain was like, I'm so sick of superheroes and villains punching each other, I'm going to use my powers to make the world better. And then he turned out to be an enormous asshole anyway. So it's like the one guy who addresses the elephant in the room, where it's like, you have all these geniuses that are really doing nothing but throwing punches. Why don't we actually try and make things better? And he turns out to be a massive tool.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
Massive tool, that sums it up pretty well.
This is one big old Allen wrench of a book.
Let's okay. put it that way. So, Robot and Frank, I'm going to try something shocking and new here. I'm going to try to show the trailer in the broadcast.
Nope, failed. You got a screen share. Are you doing that?
girls die within minutes of each other's separate lives.
Whoops. I don't know what just happened there.
Oh, it's an ad for Almost Human.
Oh, okay. Whoops.
Synergy.
Okay, so that was... Let me unmute Joe. Oh. Oh, boy.
You can do it. Joe's muted.
There we go. Joe's back.
Yeah, I was all like, what's going on? What's going on?
Right. What's happening?
It was so bizarre. You guys are just like
talking over the trailer, and I was like, oh, no. Watch the entire movie in the trailer.
So how'd you guys like that whole movie? I thought it was great.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. To me, you guys were just looking at your screen silently, and I was like, what's going on?
Oh, you can add the YouTube
Oh, that's right, because you didn't have the YouTube app in the Google Hangout.
Thanks, Google.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, you've just seen the trailer, I think. I hope that worked anyway for the viewers, and it pretty much laid out the whole story, except for a couple of little twists at the end. But yeah, so let's just jump right into it. Joe, I think you recommended this one, so
I didn't, but like,
no.
I'll say
you remember my failures, Gordon. You don't remember the good things.
Like, the less you know about this movie going in, the better. So, like, if you just watch a trailer, sorry. Because it's a sweet little movie, and when you watch it, I was surprised to find out that the main character had the kind of past he had. I don't know how many spoilers we're going to get into, and I was surprised at where it went, and I was charmed by it. I thought it's very good. We should how do we describe the movie? What do we say about the movie? It takes place in the future. It's
near
about
future.
An old man who's having trouble with his children. They are grown and they are out and they need him to be taken care of. So they, instead of driving to go see him, they send a robot to live with him. Yeah. And he and the robot have adventures. Or no, he and the robot form
they take
a bond.
Their hobbies. Let's just say it that way.
they form a real bond, and it's a buddy movie, and it's great. For me, the thing that hit me at some point is, how bad would this be to be with a robot? And who is this guy? And where is he from and everything? And I realized that he's us. Like, this could potentially be our future. Like, when I realized how far in the future it was, I was like, oh, this is us. This we're Frank Langella's age. And this is the robot that's going to take care of us.
Gordon's mind has been blown.
But, and then I thought, well, I wouldn't be this surprised if a robot was taking care of me. Like, he's like a grumpy old man. And I'm like, will we be grumpy old men be taken care of by robots? Like, if a robot came and took care of you, would it really be this kind of thing like, oh, rah, 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 get away from me, good sir, rah, rah, rah. Like,
well,
you...
yeah, and that was actually a problem I had with Liv Tyler's character, is that she's all, like, hugely anti... She's robophobic. And
pro-human.
She's pro-human, yeah. But then she has like one rough day, and then she's having the robot clean the place for her, and it's just like, you know, you give her a little bit more of a spine if you really want to include that arc at all. It was kind of cheap, and it's sort of unfortunate that they did it with the daughter, because it's, you know, female characters being scolds is such an insulting cliche.
I don't think it was necessarily. They're not attributing that character's behavior to all women.
No, they're not. No, but I'm not saying that she is a stand-in for all women. I'm saying it's a useless character trait that has often been applied to female characters because they have nothing better to do with them because. They don't.
I disagree. I think they were trying to position her character as kind of like a fake philanthropist, I guess. Or how do I want to? You know, the people who are always issue driven
type. But yeah,
a fake. No,
we should say that you guys are talking about the daughter, and it's played by Liv Tyler, and she's away because she's out adventuring, and it makes it that much crazier that this adventurer comes back and can't clean a house without the help of a robot. So it is a little bit more crazy. But that said, while watching the movie, it didn't bother me that much. I was still wrapped up in the relationship between the father and the daughter, the father and the robot, and, you know, to a lesser extent, the daughter and the robot.
But it's such a small part of the movie. Like, they have Liv Tyler is on screen maybe for 10 minutes, if that.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that's the funny thing about the movie. Cammy and I watched it last night. This movie has got a hell of a cast. Frank Langella, James Marsden, Liv Tyler, Peter Sarsgaard is the robot. I don't know how they crammed him in that tiny costume.
He's a professional guy.
Jeremy Sisto, Anna Gasteyer makes a guest appearance. But there are people, there are name actors in it. My wife was like, how did this movie get made with all these actors, and I didn't hear anything about it? Like, not a word. I don't know. Either they just did a small movie for a couple of months, and this is it. But she was really kind of surprised that, I mean, that level of talent attached to it, and it didn't get more attention than it did.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a very small movie. It has basically two sets, the house, the library, and some woods, I guess, for a third set. A couple of other locations, but it's a really small, really cheap movie to have made, and you can kind of see how it wouldn't have been too expensive. It just, you know, as an indie flick, it just gets buried because there's just, you know, blockbuster movies coming out every single month except for February, and then this year, obviously, we have the Lego movie, which is doing really well. But, usually movies like this can't get any screen time. It's not an Oscar contender. You know, maybe Frank Langella could have gotten something, but I don't know. Like, Best Actor is kind of, you know, it's kind of tough to get that indie movie into because all the big Oscar bait ones are hogging up the awards. Anyway, so it's just a small indie movie. That's kind of how you missed it, I think.
What I think is interesting is that between Robot and Frank, Superman Returns, and The Box, apparently Frank Langella and James Marsden have a thing. Like, how do they keep ending up getting cast together and stuff? It's kind of interesting.
Casting directors.
What?
They keep picking the same people that they like.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I don't know. I mean, Gordon, what did you think about the overall themes of the movie? Or?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a light, fun film. I thought the acting across the board was really good. Frank Langella especially. Susan Sarandon, we didn't mention her earlier.
She's great, yeah.
She's of course in it. And she's really good. I thought the script was a little weak in some spots, particularly when it came to the daughter and Susan Sarandon's character. I thought Jeremy Sisto did, you know, had a little bit to do, and I thought James Marsden had a nice small role. But for the most part, it's really Frank and Robot just palling around.
Yeah, I mean, if you're comparing this to an Oscar movie, it's not like all these great actors have these juicy scenes to come in and just, like, rip it to shreds.
No.
They're telling a story. It's not like, Daddy, why won't you live with the robot? You know.
I'm not trying to say it needs to be, like, this big Oscar thing.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that the script, if it were to try to do that, the script would not be there for them. There's good small character moments, largely revolving around Frank, that work really well. And I read a little bit about it, and apparently in his negotiations for coming on board, Frank Langella actually made some suggestions as to how to rewrite the script regarding his character to make it feel a little more authentic about being an old person. And, you know, just his day-to-day experience, why he would need a robot, etc. So I can see, like there are these parts that really feel authentic and true, and then there are some parts that kind of feel just a little artificial. They're minor. They are really minor. It's a fun, light flick. It's a heartwarmer.
Well, I think the trailer that we watched, I think might lead people to the wrong conclusion. The movie has soft edges, but it's not just this innocuous thing either. You know, it's not a trifle. It's light, but I think it has some importance to it in terms of how it treats technology, how people interact with technology. Joe is talking about, like, you know, this could be us. although we wouldn't be robophobic, you know, we're coming up at the same time as these machines are kind of evolving. So I don't think anybody would go like, ah, it's going to kill me. You're putting 1950s ethos into, you know, near future guy. It doesn't work. Watching it, though, I was like, I want this robot. Where is this robot? I would be thrilled to have a robot like that. Fantastic. Cleans up, you know, speaks very calmly to me. Like, you know, it would be a mellowing presence in the house. I'm all for it. Bring me my robot. I want that
plus,
robot.
The will they or won't they scenario is
hot. It was hot.
He taught Robot how to pick the lock to his heart.
Oh, that's perfect. Perfect. After the very end, that's perfect.
Good, I like that. Well, you know, the one thing I was trying to figure out while watching it is because Robot's very small, and I'm like, who's... And the costume is very seamless. It's a very simple design, but I thought it was pretty seamless, and I'm like, is there like a tween in this thing? Like, who is in it? I'm just looking her up on IMDb right now. Rachel Ma is her name, and she must be like 4 foot whisper. Like, just, it's interesting. I don't know.
I think Warwick Davis is like, how did I get this Robot and Frank job?
Warwick Davis is calling bullshit. Yeah. But yeah, they actually have a picture of her like in the costume on set cool. on IMDb. And apparently, reading about it, the guys who designed Daft Punk's costumes designed the robot. So.
Nice.
The more you know.
You know, we shouldn't talk too much about the ending. I will say, though, that there's a there's a twist at the end that I didn't see coming that I really enjoyed. And there's also there's a great dilemma that Frank has to go through where he has to choose one thing over another thing. And it really works. And it's surprising how well it works. Like, I was invested to the point where I was like, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. The one thing I would say about it, without getting into spoiler territory, the movie does a very good job of not spoon-feeding you information about these characters and their background. I mean, there's some exposition in terms of where Frank Langella's character comes from, and how his arc is ultimately resolved. I think it's open to interpretation a little bit. So I really appreciated that about the movie, where they didn't neatly put a button on it. I don't want to get too much further into it. I thought it was smart what it showed and what it held back.
It's a solid flick, and definitely I would recommend anybody. I think it's on Netflix.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and possibly Amazon Prime. I would recommend anybody who is up for a light comedy drama, checking it out. It's not super heavy, but there is a little depth to it, and the cast is great.
It's short too. It's like a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it flies by.
So I think that'll do it for this week on the Triple Feature. We'll be back in probably 2 weeks. We'll see. I just flipped off the England.
Oi.
Sorry. Would you flip off?
this is bad news in England.
Yeah, but we'll be back in 2 weeks with three more things that we'll decide soon. Do you want to maybe talk about the Lego Movie then, or do you want to just give it like 5 minutes right now?
We talked about it last time.
Yeah. We
remember
did.
Remember, I said it was the best movie ever made.
Oh, that's right. God, I can't even remember.
Gordon's having problems. He needs one of those helper robots.
I do. Did we talk about the Lego Movie? Or
we did. God, you're crazy. We talked about
who are you people? What do you want?
All right. Thanks for watching or listening or both. We'll see you in 2 weeks.